Right. Hello, this is Pat Rodwell recording an interview for the Unigannaguna project. It's Thursday the 22nd of February 2024 and I'm here with Marie to talk about her life as a youngster, but particularly between 15 and 25. Marie, could you introduce yourself?
Yes, my name is Marie Hadley. It used to be Mullen prior to getting married. I'm 58 years old, 59 this year, just had to think about that. 58 years old, I'm married, I have a daughter who's 17, I am a sibling, I have a younger brother and sister, and then there was my mum and dad as well. I do come from a big Irish family, so there were always lots of aunts and uncles and cousins, and doesn't matter where you go to, you seem to bump into somebody who's related in some way or another.
And where do you live now?
I live in Sutton Coalfield now. Been here since 2009 and moved here just before my daughter started school.
Okay, and where were you born?
I was born in Selly Oak at the QE Hospital and lived in King's Heath from the time I was born up until 1974 when I moved to Ireland.
Right, and why did you move to Ireland?
My dad was born in Ireland and most of his family were there. My mum has relatives both in Ireland and in England, but I think my dad was homesick and he wanted to try living back in Ireland, so my mum agreed to that. So he went a few years before we all actually kind of up and went over. So he probably went in around 1972, 73, and then we ended up moving over there to him in 1974.
Right. And whereabouts did you move to?
We lived in Cabra in Dublin. It's just outside the city centre. It's about a 20-minute walk in. So, 99 Annerley Road, Cabra, Dublin 7. I remember it well.
So, how old were you at the time?
So I would have been 1974, so I was 8 going on 9. So I think we moved in the summer of 1974. And then I was 9 in the September, just after starting school there.
And what was that experience like of moving to Ireland?
Oh, it was very strange. It was obviously being uprooted from everything that you knew and placed in this alien environment. And starting, I went to a convent school, so we were taught by nuns, which was a very weird experience because obviously I'd come from a school where you were taught by men and women. Going to this convent school where it was very strict, where you had to have all your uniforms specially made for you. Even they did a knicker inspection to make sure you were wearing the right knickers, which was very, very strange. And also I was put back a year because obviously I was going into the school system there. I don't know whether there wasn't any room or because it was in between or whatever. So I was actually put back a year, but it didn't seem to matter because in Ireland, they concentrate on different subjects. In England, there was a lot of English, whereas in Ireland, they concentrate a lot on maths and sciences. So it was kind of like a strange start to a new school because we were focusing on different subjects. And when I started, because of my age, I didn't have to learn Gaelic, whereas everybody else did. And I used to have to, but it was weird because I didn't have to learn it, but I had to sit in the class and listen to it. So obviously you pick up little bits and pieces, which I don't remember now, by the way, but I do remember picking up on certain bits. And then we had to obviously say prayers for every class. And, you know, we had to pray in English and in French, which was a bit weird as well. And every now and again, they'd do Gaelic prayers as well. And a lot of the nuns were very small and kind of very embarrassed about everything. I remember one particular sex education class where basically they put a diagram on the board and then the nun disappeared and that was it. So we didn't get any further than that. I was thinking that's not a very good start, is it, for a sex education class? Mm-hmm. So, remember going to school there well.
Had you been used to going to church? Was religion part of your life before then?
Always. Went to Mass every Sunday. And then obviously all the holy days we'd have to go, we'd all, you know, new clothes for Christmas and Easter and, you know, Saints Days and all this kind of stuff. And my nan seemed to be well in with the Bishop of Birmingham. I don't know why, but all these priests used to come around on a Saturday and we'd all hide and just wait till they'd gone so we could get the sandwiches and cake when they'd gone, because obviously they'd always put on a spread and stuff like that. So obviously I was used to kind of like a religious background, but because I was taught in a non-religious school here, then going into a convent basically, so you went into the convent every day. Some people boarded there, but we didn't live too far away. It was in Cabra West, which was about a 20-minute walk, so we just went for the day. So yeah, but it was in a convent.
Did you find it easy to make friends?
Not at first. I think I was quite shy at that point, and I found it quite difficult to make friends. And I think obviously I was big when I was younger, so I was a bit bullied for that before I'd even moved to Ireland. But then moving to Ireland and having an English accent, I think when I actually, because we moved in the summer and I didn't start school till the September, so it was mainly cousins and aunts and uncles that I spent all my time with then. Then actually starting school, some kids kind of bullied me for having an English accent, but some kids found it quite exotic, I think. So it was like, oh, let's befriend the English girl sort of thing. So I did actually make some friends. And weirdly enough, some of my cousins who lived here came over on their summer holidays to stay with us at the time of, in 1977, I think it was, around Saturday Night Fever, all that kind of stuff. And I remember, like, we used to line up and do all the dancing and everything. But I invited some friends from school to do this. And a couple of years ago, we went out with all the cousins. And one of my cousins said that she went to a funeral and this girl came up to her and says, "I remember you. Your name's Jacqueline." And she went, "Yes." And she went, "I went to school in Ireland with Marie. And she actually lives here. And I've not seen her." And I, you know, but obviously, it just shows what a small world it is that you know. But, so it was quite difficult to make friends. And I did realise that actually, you know, I was getting bullied for having an English accent there. But at the same time, on the flip side of that, when I came back to live in England, I was being bullied then for having an Irish accent in England. Mm. And it kind of makes you realise it doesn't matter where you go in the world, you're going to come up against that kind of those kind of people that are just, you know, you're a bit different, so we don't like you.
Had, before you moved there aged 8, had you been over to Ireland before? Had you spent much time
yes.
there?
So we used to spend all the school holidays in Ireland with aunts and uncles and cousins. So it would be like as soon as like you finish school, you'd be on the ferry going over to Ireland and then, you know, going out on day trips and stuff like that. And Mum and Dad would stay for a couple of weeks, but then they'd come back for a couple of weeks, probably to get a break from us, I guess. But they'd leave us there for a couple of weeks and then they'd come back and then they'd pick us up and go back ready for school again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And you've spoken of how you suffered from some bullying. How about the rest of the family? How did they settle in, your parents and your younger siblings?
I think my mum found it really hard because at the time when we moved over in the 70s, it was still a man's world, basically. They were still delivering milk by dray. And I remember as a kid, when I was at school here, we used to watch this programme called How We Used to Live, a history programme, and it used to cover, obviously, the Second World War and, like, you know, different eras. But then moving to Ireland, it was like stepping back into that world for me. It was like, you know, they used to deliver coal by horse and cart, they used to deliver milk by horse and cart, all this kind of stuff. But I remember my mum saying to me, because she was a cleaner in the hospital in Dublin, and I remember her saying that, you know, they didn't have the same rights as men where they worked and all this kind of stuff. And obviously I've come from a family where my nan used to work in a factory here and she was all like equal rights for women, you know, all that suffragette type stuff. So I've always come from a family who believe in equality. So it was very difficult for her because I think for her it was like stepping back and not having the same rights as she'd had when she was here. especially at that time in the 70s when everything was like completely exploding for equality and all that kind of stuff. Yeah.
And how about your dad?
I think because my dad had been there for a couple of years before we went, and because he obviously that he had a big community there as well with all my cousins and my uncles, and they all used to go out, so they'd already built up this camaraderie when my dad had been there for 2 years before us. So I guess it was like having the single life again. So he was out most nights with them, and I think he loved being back there, but obviously my mum struggled. Yeah, so, and I think that's probably one of the reasons that we ended up coming back in the end.
Yeah. When the year you went over was 74.
Yeah.
And that was the year of the Birmingham pub bombings.
It was, yes.
Was there any connection between the two?
Looking back now, obviously my mum and dad have gone. And it's something that I should have asked, but didn't ask. But the problem is, I've thought about that connection before, and maybe it was a case of them wanting to take us out of any like environment that would have been like harmful or whatever. But I don't think it was, because if you think about the fact that my dad had been there for 2 years prior, building that up, looking for a house and all that kind of stuff. So mm-hmm. I don't think there was a connection as such, but I just think it was the timing of things.
Yeah.
But yeah, remember it well. Mm. Even as an 8-year-old, I can remember being at my nan and granddad's and watching it on telly, and I just remember somebody jumping off this bridge onto the top of a bus.
That's when you were still in Birmingham.
Yeah, yeah, and hearing the sirens, because they lived in Neatchells, which obviously is not far from the city centre anyway. Mm-hmm. And it obviously, as an 8-year-old, it's frightening, but you don't really realise what's happening. But thinking about it now, I would never let a child sit and watch that on TV. Mm. So, you know, I think there's a big thing there about the fact that we think a lot more about how people are going to perceive stuff now than they did back then. It was just accepted. This is life, and you were there and you were going to see it. Yeah.
So after your period living in Ireland, what year did you move back to Birmingham?
Yeah, we came back to Birmingham in February 1979. Mm-hmm. My granddad, because when we moved to Ireland, we used to come back to England for summer holidays.
Yes.
To spend time with aunts and uncles and my nan and granddad. We used to stay with my nan and granddad. And my granddad passed away in August 1978, not long after we'd come back from our summer holiday. And obviously my mum took my younger sister over to England with her for the funeral. And then I think she found it very difficult to pull herself away from my nan, and she made the decision that she didn't want to go back and live in Ireland. So it was a case of, well, actually, we'll all move back. So my mum was already over, so that meant that was me and my brother that were still at school there, my dad working all the time sort of thing. And it was in the February then that we came back, my brother and me. And then my dad had to kind of tie everything up, renting the house out and everything. And then he came back as well. Mm. So when we came back was February 1979. All the Scar stuff and Debbie Harry and all that was kicking off. And so I was really into music.
How old were you then?
13.
Right.
But I think I found my love of music when I lived in Ireland, because we come from a musical family anyway. Everybody sings, always has done, all the family do's. Everybody would get up, sing a song, sort of thing. But when I was living in Ireland, that's when I started really watching. Before we went to Ireland, some of my cousins here used to watch the Osmonds and the Jacksons and all that kind of stuff. And then when I moved to Ireland, that's when I was there, it was all like Kate Bush and punk rock kicked off, and you know, all, and you'd got the Boomtown Rats and rock music and all this. So I was being exposed to so many different types of music. And everybody at that point was in a band in Ireland as well and had a lock-up. Even if they didn't play an instrument, they used to go just to have a laugh and get together. It was like a little youth club type thing. So I've come back then, and obviously my love of music is what kind of got me focused. And I used to just listen to it all the time, and then came back and lived with my nan. So there was myself, my mum, my nan, my brother and sister, and then my nan's brother lived there as well. So, but they lived in Aston, so we were living in the house with them. But then around, not far away on the same estate, was my dad's sister and her husband, and they had 8 kids, and they used to go to the local social club, which was on the corner by my nan's. So I used to lie in bed some nights and I could hear them singing as they were going home, and it was just that feeling of, oh my God, I know, you know, I felt like I belonged there because I knew people that were kind of all over.
Was it an Irish social club or was it just
the majority of people there were Irish, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. And my uncle had like a speech impediment type thing, so we couldn't pronounce some of his words properly. Mm. So my aunt used to win the bingo a lot because she could understand what he was calling a lot better, or the rest of the family, do you know what I mean? Yeah. So we lived there, so we moved in with my nan in the February when we came back, and then I think it was around July when we actually, my mum managed to get a house to rent in Sheldon. Mm-hmm. So we moved to Sheldon in the July. But when we moved back in the February, obviously my mum wanted to move back to King's Heath where we'd lived before we'd gone. So she put me in to Swanshurst Girls' School,
right,
which is where I would have stayed if we'd have moved back to the area. Mm-hmm. But I was only in there really for a term, but I was in there with children that I'd been to junior school with before, mm-hmm, I'd actually left, mm-hmm, infants and juniors. So it was like they kind of caught me up on, yeah, how they'd been treated after the pub bombings and everything.
So were they all from Irish families themselves?
Yeah. Obviously, it was a multiracial school, so they weren't all Irish, but... Mm. There was quite a few kids in the school that were from Irish backgrounds, mm-hmm, and some of those were in the class that I was in, and they said about all the dirty Irish and having stones thrown at them and their hair pulled and their friends weren't allowed to talk to them and all this kind of stuff, yeah. Mm-hmm. So I was like, well, I don't know whether we had a close escape there or not, because obviously we're kind of English in Ireland, so it's...
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, it was just the other way around, yeah.
And did you settle back in Birmingham? Did you...
I did, yes, because obviously, again, we've got quite a lot of cousins, and it was when we lived in England, mm, if we weren't going to Ireland during the summer holidays, all the other holidays, either my mum would be working or my aunts would be working, so they'd take it in turn, so all the kids would be together. Mm-hmm. So I was quite close to all my cousins. Mm-hmm. So when I came back from Ireland, because we were living in the same kind of area as where all they lived, mm-hmm, we all used to get together. Right. So again, that kind of cushioned the blow at making... Yeah. New friends in school, but obviously you make friends when you start school anyway. So.
And I guess you'd seen each other because you'd been on holidays backwards and forwards.
Yeah. So it was just reconnecting, catching up again with different things.
You mentioned your mum was keen to come back.
Yes.
Was she from an Irish background herself?
She is, yes. I think... My mum is one of 4 children, and she was she had 2 elder sisters and a younger brother. Mm. And I think that her 2 elder sisters were born in Ireland. She was born in England, and then her brother was born in Ireland, because it was kind of lots of to-ing and fro-ing. Mm. So it was during, like, just after the Second World War, stuff going on then. So she was born here, but she was brought up in an Irish household, so it doesn't matter, because you take that with you. And I think we've discussed this with, over the years, with my mom, with friends I've got at school, Asian friends, West Indian friends, we've all got the same kind of background in the fact that, you know, when you've got guests at the house, you go into the front room and, you know, you're always hospitable and you offer what you've got and all that kind of stuff. And it just happens that, obviously, I come from an Irish Celtic background. Mm. My friends that come from Asian backgrounds, exactly the same. My friends that come from West Indian backgrounds. So we've all got that connection in common, because, obviously, different generations view things in different ways. Some generations are kind of hanker for... the traditional ways of doing things, but then they don't seem to realise that sometimes in those countries things have moved on anyway, and they kind of get set in their ways. So, yeah, I think we all have that in common.
Yeah, that's yeah. nice.
Yeah.
Tell me where you were when you were 15.
So when I was 15, I had started school, secondary school. I think I was going into my second year at secondary school. And we'd just settled in Sheldon. Mm-hmm. All my cousins and my aunts were actually working up at the NEC at the hotel, the Metropole Hotel it was. It's the Hilton Hotel now, I think. But they were all working up there. So some would do breakfast, some would work on lunches. It was all silver service. And then, you know, some would stay on and do like the maid stuff around the hotel and stuff like that, or banqueting in the evening. But at that time, my mum had said to me, well, you know, your cousins are working up there, you might as well come and work up there. And I was like, but I'm too young to work. I can't do that. She was going, of course you can. I was working at 14. I was like, but you need a national insurance number. And she goes, we'll just make one up for you like everybody else. We know how they're structured. So they did it and we got away with it. And I couldn't believe that. So obviously at that age, I was earning quite good money because, you know, it was a 3-hour session or whatever. But
What were you working on?
It was either because they taught me silver service. So it would either be breakfast in the morning, which was literally just bringing stuff out constantly, teas and coffees and all that kind of stuff, or actually doing silver service. So it would be like 3-course lunches or banqueting in the evening when they had special events on. They used to do it and they had like large groups of people. And I remember one time that this man, we were serving soup and my mum was on a table next to me, and this man, I was only about 15, 16 at the time, and obviously very awkward, not knowing how to deal with things. He grabbed the back of my leg while I was trying to serve somebody, so my mum came over and just accidentally slopped a load of soup on his suit, and he was like, oh, and I was like, mum, I can't believe you've just done that. And she went, well, you can't touch my daughter like that. So yeah, I remember that happening quite a lot. But there was always a group of us, so again, it would all be cousins, or my aunts would be there, or there was always somebody there. So they'd say, you know, do you fancy working today? And I'd go, yeah, of course. Yeah. The early mornings were a bit of a killer, but I only ever did those of a weekend because you had to get up at 5:30 or something to get in there. I know, it was like, for me at that point, it was like getting up in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
It was like,
so you were working part time, weekends and things, and
and going to school.
What did you do with your earnings?
Oh, I used to buy clothes and records because that was my thing, and I loved music and I just had such a great collection of records. And I think that's one of the things when I got together with my husband, we were both quite young, but we had the same taste in music. So obviously we used to go out and watch bands together and all that kind of stuff. Mm.
Yeah. Can you remember any particular bands you went to see at the time?
Oh my gosh. So we went to see Susie and the Banshees. I went to see The Cure. When I was working at the Metropole, I served, Freddie Mercury, because Queen were playing at the NEC. So I actually served Freddie Mercury, and we got free tickets to go and see Freddie Mercury up at the NEC as well. Yeah, so that was really good. But yeah, we used to go and see lots of small bands, like there's a band called Gong. We went to watch them, and yeah, loads of bands.
Was there any difference between the the music and the bands your Irish cousins were interested in and the music that you were interested in?
I think so, yeah. But they seem to be into more mainstream stuff, where I really liked rock music. So I was into all sorts of bands that they didn't really like. And I just loved guitar, like a band called Santana. And Carlos Santana was just the most amazing guitarist. But, you know, they were, like I say, they were into Roxy music and David Bowie. But I liked all sorts of music. Right. Yeah.
And is it, when did you meet your husband?
I met my husband just after my 16th birthday. Right. Yeah.
Where did you meet him?
there used to be a club, which was a rock club, on a Friday night in Yardley. And I used to go there and I met this girl in there one night, and she was in the toilets crying because she really liked this guy and he wasn't interested. And I was like, forget about him, come on, let's go and have a laugh and everything. So I got to know her And she turned around to me one day and she said, oh, there was this guy I went out with him and he was like, he really led me on. She was going, do you fancy meeting up with him and doing the same? And here we are, 40 odd years later. She's like, and then when are you going to get rid of him? And yeah. I was like, oh, yeah. So that's how I ended up meeting him, because she introduced us one day. Yeah. And we used to go into town to Mr. Bill's Beer Cellar. And they used to play rock music in there every Saturday morning. And we had a big group of friends and everybody used to just meet in there.
Right. I was going to ask about friends. Tell me about your group of friends.
So there was myself and Sarah. And at school I had three friends. There was Sue, there was Anne, there was Sally. So we were quite close when I was at school. But then when I met Sarah, because Sarah was into all the same stuff as me and they weren't really into the same stuff, I used to go and meet her in town and they weren't interested in doing that. And that's how I started going into town and met the group of friends that we had. So there was myself, there was Sarah. She had a boyfriend called Mike. Then he had a friend called Griff, and then there was his girlfriend as well. And then my husband, Haggis, was from West Brom, so he knew a whole load of other people. And then we met other people in there, and it was just like everywhere you went to go and watch bands and stuff like that, you'd end up seeing the same people all the time.
So that your friendship group really expanded from your sort of school friends and your cousins, because of your interest in music.
Yeah, I think it was the interest in music, and I think it was also because by that time I'd got used to actually, I've moved around, I've done this, I've done that. Let's go and see what's out there. So I was more adventurous in wanting to go into town and see what was happening and everything. And my friends weren't really that interested in doing that.
Why do you think that was?
I don't know, really. I can't put my finger on it. I think they seem to be more homebods than, you know, it got to that stage where it was like, come on, let's go. And I don't know whether it was because obviously I could afford it a bit more as well because I'd got the money coming in. Yeah. Maybe they couldn't afford it. I never even thought about that aspect of it before, to be honest. But
and would the experience of having moved countries and back and had to adapt, did that have any?
I think so, yeah. Like I say, I think that made me a bit more adventurous in actually wanting to go further afield and seeing what was out there. You know, when you've moved around and you've done that and you've thought, and I think it was coming back again to that thing about, well, actually, they bullied me there, let's see what's out there, can't be any worse. So it was a case of, yeah, let's go out. And then obviously from meeting my husband and having this friendship group out there that we all used to go and see bands together, that just kind of expanded and we met different people. People kind of, you know, there was a small friendship group who were quite close. And then one of our friends went, because obviously I never had my daughter till I was 40. So a lot of our friends got married and had children when they were in their 20s. And me and my husband were like, actually, we're not finished playing yet. We still want to go out and see what's out there. So I think it was around 1989. So I must have been about 24 at that. No, 24. So at that point, myself and my husband decided to go on holiday and we went to Tunisia. And while we were there, his mum was due to retire from work. And she retired on the Friday and his dad woke her up with a cup of tea as he did every Saturday morning, but she'd passed away in her sleep.
Right.
And we'd only been on holiday for about 2 days, I think it was, and then he got this phone call and I'll never forget the blood curdling scream that came at the time. So anyway, we ended up coming home and obviously going through all that process and supporting his dad and all this kind of stuff. But my brother, at this point, he's left school now, so it's his turn to start, you know, adventuring out. And he did various things. He did Camp America, where he was working with disabled children in America. And then after that, he got a job delivering cars. So he saw most of America. Year after, he decided to go and work on a kibbutz. And so he did loads of things. So he was doing loads of travelling and meeting people. He'd been to India the year before and he decided to go back out and meet some friends. So we said, well, with the money that you get back off your holiday, come and meet me after Christmas. And I was like, India, yeah, let's get a plane, just take off. And he went, yeah, when you get to this place, he says, get a taxi, get them to take you to Bagga, and then I'll be waiting in Laxman's bar for you. Yeah. So 36-hour journey, 1990 this was. Absolutely shattered, really apprehensive. This isn't going to work. We're going to the other side. We walked into this bar and this waiter turned around to me and he just went, "You've got to be Sean's sister. He's just gone back to the room. He'll be back in a minute. Just take a seat. We got a drink and everything." And I was like, God, this world is so small, really, to what you think. So, but then after that, obviously, we met other people. And before we'd done that, we decided to do the band thing. So we were meeting different people because we were forming bands and then playing with other people.
Yeah.
It all started basically with us saying, let's have a go, let's try and form a band. We don't know whether we can play instruments or whatever, but let's get in there. So we had one friend who could play drums a bit because he played it in Boys Brigade. Yeah. And then my husband played the keyboards a little bit. And then we had another friend who played guitar. So, and then we decided to rent this lock-up that was down the Tyburn Road.
Yeah.
So we were going in there and just taking a few drinks in and having a laugh and stuff and inviting people in. And we just got to know people in there, other musicians who then started coming. And then we started auditioning for people. And then me and my sister got asked if we wanted to join another band. And that's how we ended up doing the backing singing from and meeting lots of different bands that were down there and different really talented people, some of them. So we were doing all this as well. So we went away, and then when we were away, we started meeting lots of people who were DJs and DJing in different types of music and stuff like that as well. And then from some of the bands that my husband had been in, he met this guy called John, who's his, I'd say, a lifelong friend. I mean, all the equipment that they've got here, they still write music and go out and play their music. It's, you know, like psychedelic trance stuff. They make all that. They've been making it for years now. And in 2000, Twin Towers was 2001, I think. So in 2001, just not long after that had happened, they got invited out to play in Japan. So we all trekked off to Japan and they got interviewed on Shibuya Radio in this big glass box. And oh my God, it was like being treated like rock royalty. It was fantastic.
And all this started from an early interest in music for both of you. What did your mum and dad think about all your travels and all your music?
So my mum and dad had been quite ill in different ways. My dad had a triple bypass operation when he was 40. And they only gave him, like, we didn't know it at the time, but they only gave him 6 months to live. In fact, he only died 2 years ago. He was 80, 85, I think he was, when he passed away. And my mum, who always worried about my dad because he was ill first, she ended up with cancer. She had it 18 years before she died. And she used to say, it's about living with cancer and not letting it stop you and always having something to look forward to. And they always taught us, because of my dad being ill, they always said, you learn something new every day, and life is about going out and actually experiencing new things, new cultures, finding out about different places. That's what life's about. So we kind of embraced that, I think, and that's why we did all the travelling that we did. And we enjoyed it. We enjoyed going out and seeing how other people live. Japan is the most diverse place I've ever been to, and it was, at that point, it was so technologically far ahead compared to us that it was like being in some sort of sci-fi world. It was really weird.
And so, how about your family and cousins? Are they spread around the world?
They are, yes. I've just come back from New York, where I've seen one of my cousins. She's originally from Dublin. Her brother lives in Texas. Her sister lives in Glasgow. And another sister lives back in Ireland still. But all my other cousins, like my mum's children, my aunt's children, that there was four of them, they lived in Chelmsley Wood, they all still live in Birmingham. And then my other aunt, her children spread around Worcester. Not too far, though, do you know what I mean? But some of them have actually gone and lived in Australia and then come back as well. So they've moved around quite a bit as well.
Let's go back to what you did when you left school.
Yes.
So was that age 15, 16?
I left school in 1980. Actually, it was 82, I think it was. So I was 16 when I left school. And at the time, we were in the middle of a recession. There were no jobs. And the careers advice was, this is where you go to sign on. So they didn't give much hope to any of us, really, you know, at that time. And they just started youth training schemes. So I thought, well, actually, I haven't got any skills. And my mum was saying, you know, you need to find something that you can do. So I decided to go on a youth training scheme to do admin and things like that. And it was a Pitman's youth training scheme. So they took you to type. You know, and filing, and but a part of that as well was about how to dress for the office and makeup. And they had, I'll never forget it, they had this woman come in from Rackham's to show us how to apply makeup, and I was one of the people.
Tell us what Rackham's is.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, Rackham's is quite a high-end shop that used to be in Birmingham. And they were the first one to have their own cosmetic counters and all this kind of stuff. So obviously had these beautiful women that were always lovely, you know, really well presented and well done. Right? So that as part of this youth training scheme, they got people in from Rackham's to show us how to apply makeup and all this. And I remember being one of the guinea pigs for this, and this woman put my makeup on, and she at the end she gave me a mirror and she goes, now what do you think of that? And when I looked at it, I just thought, I look like a clown. I would never, ever dream of putting this much colour on my face. It looked ridiculous. And it was like, I don't think I'll ever do that again. And to this day, I've never bought anything in one of those cosmetic counters. And I think it always harps back to that day. It's like, no, that's not for me.
And where did, in terms of jobs, where did the Pitman's training scheme lead to?
So when I actually did that, there was a few work experience sessions that you could do. It was like a 4 month stint in one place, and because it was a 2 year course, I think. So I remember working at BRMB Radio and bringing people up to the green room, and you know, working on the accounts, and you know, just being a runner and like trying all the different jobs that they had in there, and met a few people doing that as well. And there was another one which was at a company called Parkinson Cowan. I think they made cookers, something like that, and fireplaces. But that was down the Stratford Road. But I actually walked out of there after about 3 weeks because they literally had me franking stuff in a franking machine and making coffee. And I said to my mum, I'm not learning anything. And she says, well, if you're not happy with it, just tell them you don't want to do it anymore. Go back and get them to find you something where you're actually going to learn something. So I did. And I thought, oh God, how grown up am I actually going in and doing something like that?
How old were you then when you did that?
Oh my God, I must have been about, if I started it when I was 16, I must have been about 17, about 17. And I think that was the point when I started to realise actually the hierarchical thing that you have when you're in school. You know, you've got to stand up for yourself in some situations. And I think that was the first learning curve for me of being able to do that and say, actually, no, I'm not happy with this. Yeah.
And that led to a job with Birmingham City Council?
It did. I did a few temping jobs because another one of the work experience in one of the work experience things I did when I was doing the youth training scheme as well was Solihull Maternity Unit, and I had to use one of the plug boards for the phone connections and stuff like this. And then I joined a temping agency, and they sent me on one job, and it was like, or you can use a switchboard. So they sent me in, but it was this newfangled thing. I had no idea what I was doing. I managed to blag it for about half a day, and then they politely let me go after that. But I did get paid, so that was good. And another job I did at the time as well was working for Yellow Pages, and they just had loads and loads of newspapers, and you had to cut things out, stick them on a bed of paper, so that it could be passed on to their call centre, so they could call people up to see if they wanted to advertise. So that was another one. And then I ended up temping for Birmingham City Council, and just doing a bit of admin in their buying department, basically.
How much, can you remember how much those temping jobs paid and how much the training scheme paid?
So the youth training scheme, I think actually that started at about £21 a week. But obviously I was subsidising that at the time with the money I was making from my waitressing. And then the temping jobs, I think I was earning more than the £21 a week, but I can't remember exactly because they were like hourly rates. One job I did was up at the blood transfusion service 4 hours a day, and it was just sticking labels on vials of blood and things like that, which was very strange. But then, like I say, I got the one with the council, and that kind of opened up a whole load of admin-y type skills that I'd not had to actually put into practice before. So that was quite beneficial. I learned quite a lot there. And obviously, being in that environment, as things changed, you had to change with it. So you were kind of learning on the job as well.
And how long did you end up working for the council before you?
34 years. Just always in the procurement department or buying department. So all the way through the complete, you know, the digitisation process through. And so obviously it all went from, at the time when we were doing it, if you were doing an evaluation of a contract, you'd photocopy all the bits of paper and stick them all together so you could see things side by side. And then obviously computers came in, and then Excel. I live my life by Excel. I don't know whether I'd be able to exist these days without it. But yeah. Loads of changes, but it also gave me the opportunity to get my degree, because they obviously they wanted to train their staff up, because they did believe that obviously you invest in your staff, and through that investment comes promotion. So they were able to hold on to a lot more staff because they were investing in them. And I think that's one of the things that's lacking today. There's no investment in people.
How old were you when you got your degree through working with the council?
I started it because, first of all, the foundations day, because I only had GCSEs when I left school. So I did a BTEC, first of all, which was a couple of years. And that was like the foundation of my degree then, because I've got CIPS, which is the Chartered Institute of Purchasing and Supplies, which is about 8 or 9 different modules that go to form up that degree, such as like setting up a stores, international purchasing, and knowing all the documentation that you have to use and all the kind of traditions and obviously time differences when you're dealing with different countries, time zones and all that kind of stuff. So I started with the BTEC, which was 2 years.
And was that day release? Or
that was day release at the time, yeah. And then I started on the CIPS Foundation, because there was a foundation course which was 2 years, and I think that was about 5 modules. And then the council stopped funding it, so there was a gap for about 3 or 4 years. Mm-hmm. Then they said, yes, we'll fund you to do it. So then we went back and we carried on doing the modules, and we were doing like 2 or 3 modules a year until I actually passed. But then they stopped the funding again after about 2 or 3. So there were gaps in between, and I think I finally passed in, well, actually, I passed in 2005, and I know that because when I went to get my degree at Nottingham Trent University, where I actually graduated from, when I went to get my degree, I was there in my cap and gown, but I'd got this blouse on, and it was sitting really funny. I was thinking, there's a big gap. I'm sure I haven't put on that much weight. And then I think it was 2 days later I found out I was pregnant with my daughter.
So you were about 40 at the time?
Yeah, 39 I was when I'd finally passed it. Yeah. But also, because of the political situation within the council and all the different changes, departmental changes, this, that and the other, one minute they wanted us to do the formal degree, the next minute they said, oh no, you can do an MVQ. So I did the MVQ route as well and passed it that way, and then went back and finished it formally. So I did the same degree about 3 or 4 different ways in the end. But also at the time, they said that actually you don't need qualifications to do a job as long as you have written specifications and procedures on how to do that. So under, I think it's ISO 9000, isn't it, where you write down. So I ended up mapping out and writing the processes and procedures, and then they introduced investors in people, and people couldn't get their heads around it. So I actually wrote the strategy, and we got the policy rolled out for that. And then as a result of doing that, I got to know different people, and one of the ladies was working in the HR in training department, and she was going on maternity leave, and she said, do you fancy covering for me while I'm on maternity leave? So I actually did the training, the trainer thing. So I was actually training people in induction and stuff that were coming into work for the council as well. Then I did that on secondment for a couple of years and then went back to my substantive post after that. But I think I was about 24 at that point, because I thought to myself, I've done this for so long, I'm sure I must be capable of doing something else. And that's why I was taking on these extra bits to get new skills.
Yeah.
And that's why I thought, oh, I'm going to have a go at that.
Yeah. Did was education seen as important within your family?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. I think from my mum and dad's perspective, as long as you had a stable job and you were happy, that's all that they were bothered about, really. But I think it was going through the process of learning on the youth training scheme and then learning things at work, and then I kind of embraced the lifelong learning thing, and I thought there's always something new out there that you can learn, that you, and it's good to have all these skills because you never know when they're going to come in handy. Because, like, obviously a lot of the training skills have helped me in my procurement role, in sitting down clients, explaining to them the background of what it is they've got to do and why they've got to do it, helping them in writing specifications and all that kind of stuff. And having that teaching experience gives you the opportunity to talk to people in a way, or use language that kind of breaks down those barriers so it's not as formal as it would normally be, and making it interesting, because, you know, buying's not the most exciting thing, and anybody, you know, everybody goes, oh, anybody can buy, but it's like then, oh yeah, but you've got all this stuff, what if somebody slips and breaks the neck, you're liable for that, and this, that and the other, and this is why we have to do what we do and the way we do it, because we're public service. And it's having all that knowledge and being able to impart that and explain it to people that makes them understand why they've got to do what they've got to do, even if they're not interested in it. It's a hurdle you've got to get over to get from A to B, so let's try and make it as enjoyable as possible.
Thinking about another aspect of your life, that, between sort of 15 and 25, tell me where you were living at home with your family at 15.
Yes.
Tell me, between then and the next 10 years, where you lived, how you lived.
Yeah, sure.
Who you're living with.
So I passed my driving test when I was 17, because when I was young, it was one of the things I used to dream about. Oh my God. When I was little and I had my bike, that was my first experience of freedom. Little bike with these red ribbons that came out of the handle, and it had this big box on the back. So I used to shove sandwiches and crisps and pop in there, and we used to go out and just have picnics and stuff like that. And then obviously as I got older, I thought, oh, I can't wait to be able to drive. So I passed my test when I was 17. And then my mum and dad bought me a car, this clapped out old Volkswagen Beetle for my 18th birthday. And I sat in the window staring at it because I was so excited, because the world had just opened up to me. I could go anywhere I wanted to at this point. I'd got the money to pay for the insurance because I was working. So basically, my husband at the time was still living at home. And so I used to go to West Brom a lot, and he used to come over. He had a motorbike at the time. So, but once we got the car, we could literally go anywhere. So we used to go, we'd go to festivals. We went to Wakefield Folk Festival, I think was the first one. And we met friends who lived in Cardiff. So we used to go down to Cardiff a lot and meet them. But we knew people that kind of spread out. So we'd take the opportunity as much as we could to just go and have an adventure. And when I was little, my mum and dad had a camper van as well. And we used to have great adventures in that. So as we got older, I said, it'd be brilliant to have a camper van. And because my husband was DJing at festivals, and my sister-in-law, she is a clothes designer, or was at the time, she knew people that were designing clothes and selling them and everything. So we started buying up clothes. And then when my husband was DJing, I'd do a stall selling clothes. And I was like, well, if we're going to go to festivals in Europe, let's buy a camper van. So we did, and we had mad adventures with that. And we've just recently bought a new one, which is on the drive. So we're kind of going back again. So, so I left home at 18 and I moved into a flat. And then that was it then. It was just travelling round, you know, going for weekends away. We used to spend loads of weekends either down in Pembrokeshire or in Cardiff because we'd got friends that lived down there, and all New Year's and everything was all down there with all our friends. So just going to gigs all the time and just socialising, basically.
Sounds fantastic.
It was, yeah. Yeah, couldn't fault it. I ended up DJing myself as well because while my husband was doing it, I started DJing all the chill-out type music, and then meeting people at the clubs. There was one guy who owned he produced a magazine in Leicester. I can't remember what it was called now, but he asked me to review some of the chill-out music that he was getting. So I used to get all this music through, and so I'd sit down and listen to it. And that's how I got the music. So I'd review it, and all the good stuff I'd send off the reviews to him, and it went in the magazine. And I got hold of all this music. So then I started getting asked to play at different places. And the biggest gig I think I played was at Brixton Academy. So, that was brilliant. It was really good fun. And like I say, we used to do that all the time. And then I was diagnosed with endometriosis, and that's when, like, I was told that actually, because of my age, because by this time I was 36, I was diagnosed with endometriosis, and they put me on a course of tablets to try and clear it, which it did for a little while, but then it started to come back, and they said, at your age now, we would say, because I was about 39 by this point, they said, at your age now, we would recommend a hysterectomy, but as you've not had children, it's kind of your time to decide whether you want to have any or not. So we decided, and yeah, I got pregnant when I was 40.
And you now have a grown-up daughter?
I do, she's 18 in 2 weeks. Can't believe that.
Right. And does she consider herself part of an Irish family or part of an English family?
I don't know, I've never really asked her, but obviously she she knows she comes from a big family. But I think when you're little, you see, my husband was adopted, but my husband comes from a really big family in the Black Country as well. So he had loads of uncles and aunts. She knows that side of the family as well, because obviously there's different generations there as well. And she knows a lot of the family on this side, on my side as well. But I think, obviously, when you're little, you don't really understand it, and you know, because then you come home, you go to school, you do your bits and pieces. But it's only now at her age now that she's starting to realise she's got this big extended family, and starting to connect with them and understand, you know. But I think myself, my brother and my sister are quite close anyway. Their kids are a little bit older than Mia, but they're all coming over next week and taking her for her first drink. So, you know, I think they're all quite looking forward to that. And she's quite excited about being accepted as one of them now as well. Yeah.
Oh, and do you find the time to visit Ireland much nowadays?
I don't. And I think it was because of all the to-ing and fro-ing as a kid. But also, I remember going over, it's got to be about 10 years ago now, and my aunt saying to me, would you ever think of moving back to Ireland? And I said, I don't think we could afford it now, because obviously with the kind of the economic situation in Ireland, everything is so expensive and house prices are so much more there. Now, this was before they had their crash as well. So whether it's different now, but I should imagine it's about on a par. Now, I think I would like to move back. Yeah. But and I've got friends who have like Irish connections, and all of us are all saying that it'd be really nice to go and do a road trip, because obviously when I was a kid, I've got fond memories of being up in the mountains and going to the beach and getting on the train and going to the beach with my mates, like, you know, during the summer and stuff like that. But I've never travelled around Ireland, so I really fancy the idea of doing that. Yeah. So I think we're probably, now that we've got the camper van as well, it's perfect. Yeah.
Well, that's lovely. That's lovely. That's been really good. Thank you. It's really
welcome.
Really interesting and lovely to hear. Is there anything else that you want to add? Want to say? Given that this project is about Irish women between their experiences between 15 and 25 years old, is there anything else you've thought of that you'd like to say?
Just obviously from the Irish connection and coming from an Irish family, the women in Irish families always seem to be the strongest. They seem to be the ones that take the lead. And I should imagine anybody else that you interview will say the same. They've got this back history, this back story of all the women that have been there in the past, that have been really strong women and, you know, would do anything for their families. And, you know, so I think that's about it. And I'd be interested in hearing other people's stories as well, because I'm sure there's a lot of interesting women out there.
There is.
Yeah.
But thank you very much. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.